Hello, this is Irene Bullard. I'll be reading the Bloomington Pantograph, dated Tuesday, November 28th. Let's begin on the front page. Initiative to make a change for homeless. Merchants come together to support service agencies. Instead of giving money to panhandlers on the street, downtown Bloomington merchants are urging people to place that change in collection boxes at their businesses. It's part of the Change to Make a Change initiative that came out of several community discussions after a May incident when someone poured tar on a downtown bench frequented by a homeless man. It was kind of the eye-opening moment that woke us all up to the fact that we all share this world together and that this city center belongs to all of us and what we can do in positive ways to make a difference, said Tricia Stiller, who served as Downtown Bloomington Association Executive Director before recently becoming the city's Downtown Development Division Manager. I don't know who did that. No one approved of that. And I don't want this to turn into Downtown Hates the Homeless, because that's really not what it was, said Downtown Business and Property Owner Doug DeLong. I do think it was maybe a turning point where people realize that it's easy to say, boy, I wish we could get rid of this problem, but treating people like that is not the way we wanted to do it. We just wanted to do something about people aggressively panhandling, DeLong added. Stiller anticipates the program will be up and running by the first of the year, if not sooner. This is a proactive campaign to address panhandling in our community, she said. This is one step in an ongoing conversation to ease the discomfort of life difficulties such as homelessness. This is a collaborative effort, she added. Our downtown merchants want to provide their patrons an opportunity to be helpful in a way that is positive, rather than responding to someone who perhaps might approach you in the street. Donations to the Change to Make a Change campaign will be distributed among local service providers who are already in the trenches doing such good work, said Stiller. They include PATH and the Salvation Army. We are excited for this partnership, and we like to see them being proactive, said Angie Bouban, Development Director for Salvation Army of McLean County, that operates a homeless shelter in the downtown area. Not only is it an opportunity for fundraising, but it's also an opportunity for education and advocacy, she added. After the bench incident, an initial group of five or six merchants grew over several meetings to between 20 and 30 downtown property owners, business owners, retailers, and residents. It was a learning process for us, said DeLong. This has been an ongoing issue with the downtown, and no one knew what to do. We researched this and found that while there used to be laws against panhandling, most of them have been struck down by the courts because they are unconstitutional. You, as a U.S. citizen, have the right to ask another citizen for help. The Change to Make a Change idea came about through learning that other cities are using the concept to address panhandling, he added. All of us are a little uncomfortable when someone asks us for money. We don't know whether to give them the money. We don't know if we are enabling them or whatever, said DeLong. So the idea was that by giving money to a group we know, it is going to help them. We can still give money, but we are not increasing the problem of panhandling by just encouraging it, basically, with giving people a dollar or two every time we see them. In addition to participating in community dialogues, DeLong, a graphic designer, put together materials including a brochure to be given to the homeless with information about where they can obtain services to get help. He also designed a logo for stickers that participating merchants will place on their windows, denoting they are locations where donations can be made. These funds can help us make sure that we don't have to cut services, said Bouman. We are not just a place for the homeless to stay. We are a place for them to get help and support in job training, and we help them find housing. By donating to this campaign, you will be donating to those efforts. the Salvation Army Safe Harbor Shelter at 601 West Washington Street can house up to 40 men and 18 women. In the winter, spaces in the building are converted into additional warming centers to provide beds for up to 80 people. Home Sweet Home Ministries, which is nearby but not downtown, also provides housing and services to the homeless. BPD probes gunfire incidents. Bloomington police are investigating three incidents of shots being fired over the holiday weekend, but don't think the shootings are related. The first took place around 10:30 p.m. Wednesday when officers were called to the 900 block of South Clayton Street. They arrived and saw a large group of males walking away. Officers were told by a witness that multiple gunshots were seen and heard from two separate groups. After the shooting, several people left in a silver-colored sedan. While checking the immediate area, officers located evidence that the shots had in fact been fired, but no arrests have been made. The investigation is ongoing, and anyone with information is asked to contact BPD Detective Tim Power at 309-434-2579 or tpower@cityblm.org. The second shooting took place around 4:33 a.m. Sunday. Police responded to the 2200 block of Todd Drive, where a witness reported hearing several gunshots and seeing a male run away from the area. Officers located a vehicle with a broken window. No injuries were reported and no arrests have been made. Anyone with information is asked to contact Detective Matt Dick at 309-434-2475. Or mdick@cityblm.org. The latest incident took place around 1:37 a.m. Monday when officers received another report of shots fired, this time in the 900 block of West Grove Street, where police were told a suspicious vehicle was parked there, followed by multiple gunshots being heard. While checking the area, officers located an unoccupied vehicle with a bullet hole in the trunk. Detectives also reported several rounds had entered a nearby residence. An additional vehicle which had been parked in the area was reported as damaged from gunfire too. The investigation also is ongoing and anyone with information is asked to contact Power or Detective Kurt Moss at 309-434-2534 or cmaas@cityblm.org. These three incidents are not known to be related at this time, Elias Mendiola, a department spokesman, said Monday. No injuries or arrests have been reported. If you want to remain anonymous, call McLean County Crime Stoppers at 309-828-1111. If your call leads to the arrest and indictment of suspects, you may be eligible for a reward of up to $1,000. Renovated Lincoln Depot to be unveiled next week. As Mayor of Lincoln, Seth Goodman is interested in an outside visitor's first impression of the town. After December 5th, any concerns for those traveling by train should be eliminated. Following the ribbon-cutting ceremony for the official reopening of the renovated, historic $4.1 million Lincoln Station in downtown Lincoln. It's a great addition for Lincoln, Goodman said, and it's also a great addition for those coming through by train because it will be the first thing they see when they stop. The Lincoln Station High-Speed Rail Project is a multi-year undertaking that involved site acquisition, site preparation, and construction. The original depot, constructed in 1911, has been fully renovated and retains much of its historic character and details, according to site plans. The North Freight Building has been renovated as the new passenger rail station for use by Amtrak patrons. In addition to the renovation on the Freight Building, everything else is new, including the parking lots, sidewalks, lighting, and landscaping. The shelter sits on a platform near where Abraham Lincoln christened the city in 1853. Most of the building, 101 North Chicago Street, was closed to the public in 1972, but was sold and renovated in 1977 and named the Depot Restaurant. The restaurant and the catering hall was last known as McCarthy's at the Depot, but it closed in 2013. Two old Illinois Central Railroad passenger cars and two cabooses were removed from the property in 2015. Most of the funding for the project came from a federal high-speed rail initiative grant administered by the Illinois Department of Transportation to introduce better performance and higher speeds on the Union Pacific Railroad tracks between Chicago and St. Louis. IDOT Secretary Randy Blankenhorn said, the state has been working with city officials for years on the project. With the modernization, customers will have smoother rides, upgraded stations, crossing, and signal improvements for safety and guarantees of better on-time performance, he said. For Lincoln, the completion of the 3,700-square-foot project means much more, Goodman said. We are really excited to find ways that our local residents can also utilize the depot, he said. It's huge and has the potential to add a business or two, if that is what the city council wanted to do. Additionally, they are through with all of the work, and the streets that we had to close during some of the renovation project will never have to be closed again. An estimated 450,000 people travel through Lincoln each year on the train. Beginning next year, trains will be able to travel more than 100 miles per hour on portions of the route from Chicago to St. Louis. The ribbon-cutting ceremony will be held at 10 a.m. December the 5th. State Watch. University honors Scholar Simpson. The University of Chicago is preparing to unveil a sculpture in honor of a 1900s alumna who was the first black woman to receive a doctorate from the university. The Chicago Tribune reports that students Asiya Aka and Shay Omonio will unveil a bust of Georgiana Rose Simpson at the Reynolds Club today. The Reynolds Club is the university's student center that was once accessible only to white males. The University of Chicago is on the south side in a predominantly African-American community, and yet there is not that much African-American history represented on our campus, Omonio said. This is despite the fact that so many prominent black scholars came from this institution. Omonio and Aka say they want to work to develop new monuments of women and minorities who have gone unrecognized for their contributions. Records show Simpson was asked to leave the dorms after her presence caused uproar among students because of her race. She commuted to campus until she completed her studies. Simpson went on to write for W.E.B. Du Bois Publications. Today in History. Today is Tuesday, November 28th, the 332nd day of 2017. There are 33 days left in the year. Today's highlight. On November 28th, 1942, fire engulfed the Coconut Grove nightclub in Boston, killing 492 people in the deadliest nightclub blaze ever. The cause of the rapidly spreading fire, which began in the basement, is in dispute. One theory is that a busboy accidentally ignited an artificial palm tree while using a lighted match to fix a light bulb. On this date in 1520, the Portuguese navigator Ferdinand Magellan reached the Pacific Ocean after passing through the South American Strait that now bears his name. In 1861, the Confederate Congress admitted Missouri as the 12th state of the Confederacy after Missouri's disputed secession from the Union. In 1905, Sinn Féin was founded in Dublin. In 1912, Albania proclaimed its independence from the Ottoman Empire. In 1943, President Franklin D. Roosevelt, British Prime Minister Winston Churchill, and Soviet leader Joseph Stalin began conferring in Tehran during World War II. In 1958, Chad, Gabon, and Middle Congo became autonomous republics within the French community. Thought for today. Journalism is literature in a hurry. Written by Matthew Arnold, English poet and critic, 1822 to 1888. Today's flick fact. Question: true or false? Being watched by security cameras, even around the bathroom areas at the White House, was one of Ronald Reagan's biggest pet peeves about life there. And the answer is, that's true. Putting up with the always working security monitors, some even at the entryways to the White House's private bathrooms, bugged him. At least, so he confided to pals in Eureka at an 1982 50th class reunion there for his 1932 graduating class from Eureka College. Dozens submit petitions. Filing period for local state elections begins and lasts through December 4th. Less than an hour into petition filing, McLean County Board got its first contested race for 2018. District 2 Republican Jim Soldner filed first thing Monday morning, and Democratic challenger Dave Siebert followed shortly after, setting up a November 6th general election showdown for the sprawling rural district that includes Arrowsmith, Bellflower, Downs, Ellsworth, Hayworth, Leroy, and Saybrook. Soldner of Ellsworth is the board's vice chairman and has served two terms. Siebert of Saybrook is a first-time candidate and retired project manager at the Clinton nuclear plant. Nomination filing for the March 20th primary started with several unopposed local filings. Those included Nikita Richards, a Democratic candidate for McLean County Clerk, McLean County Sheriff John Sandage, a Republican, District 1 County Board candidate Jeremiah Houston, a Republican, District 4 County Board candidate Logan Smith, a Democrat, District 5 County Board member David Seltzer, a Republican, District 7 County Board member Ryan Strichlow, a Republican, District 8 County Board member Paul Segobiano, a Democrat, District 10 County Board member Chuck Erickson, a Republican. McLean County Clerk Kathy Michael, a Republican, plans to run for re-election against Richards. District 1 County Board member Don Cavallini, a Republican, has said he won't seek re-election. District 4 County Board member Mark Johnson, a Republican, has not announced if he will seek re-election. District 9 County Board member Eric Rankin, a Democrat, has said that he won't seek re-election. Libertarian Richard Bennett plans to run for Rankin's seat. State-level filings Monday morning included State Senator Bill Brady, a Bloomington Republican, State Representative Dan Brady, a Bloomington Republican, State Representative Keith Somer, a Morton Republican, Jill Blair, a Bloomington Democrat, seeking Somer's seat, David Paul Blumenschein, a Normal Republican, seeking Dan Brady's seat. State Senator Jason Barrickman, a Bloomington Republican, told the Pantograph last week that he plans to seek re-election. Bill Brady and Dan Brady are not related. Benjamin Webb of Normal has said that he'll file for the Democratic nomination for Dan Brady's seat. Bloomington Libertarian Chris Howick has said that he'll run for Somer's seat. Three Republicans and a Democrat, none local, have said that they'll run for the seat of State Representative Bill Mitchell of Forsyth, who will retire from the legislature. Federal-level filings Monday included U.S. Representative Rodney Davis, a Taylorville Republican, and three Democratic challengers, Eric Jones of Edwardsville, Betsy Londrigan of Springfield, and John Ebel of Urbana. U.S. Representative Darren LaHood, a Dunlap Republican, also filed, as did Democratic challenger Brian Dieters of Morton, and Republican challenger Don Reince of Benson. Democrat Eunice Rodriguez of Eureka also plans to run for the seat. Filers for Illinois governor included Republican incumbent Bruce Rauner with running mate Evelyn Sanguinetti, and three Democrats, Daniel Biss with Letezza Wallace, Chris Kennedy with Ra Joy, and J.B. Pritzker with Juliana Stratton. Attorney General filers were Republican Erica Harold and five Democrats, Scott Drury, Renato Mariotti, former Governor Pat Quinn, Kwame Raoul, and Nancy Rottering. Incumbent Lisa Madigan, a Democrat, said that she won't seek re-election. The filing period ends on December 4th. Council okays Brick Streets plan. No commitment on funding levels. The City Council Monday approved a revised Brick Streets master plan, but did not commit to the funding levels proposed in a related list of projects over 10 years. The plan proposed reconstruction of 10 blocks of brick streets and patching 20 more over 10 years, beginning with the streets in the worst condition. The Public Works Department initially proposed $400,000 a year for reconstruction costs and $100,000 per year for patching costs. A majority of the council expressed concerns about committing to the funding levels without first having a larger discussion on the budget and infrastructure needs. Ward 6 Alderman Karen Schmidt suggested stripping the spending levels out of the master plan, but added that brick streets should be considered when the city prioritizes its overall infrastructure needs. I think it's dishonest of us that we have a plan here for $850,000 when we don't even know how big the puddle of water is that we have to spend on everything, said Schmidt. The plan, without any funding levels, was approved by a 6-3 vote, with Alderman Kim Bray of Ward 9, Diana Howman of Ward 8, and Scott Black of Ward 7 voting against the measure as proposed by Schmidt. The first Brick Street project, Monroe Street between Clinton and Robinson Streets, was estimated to total $839,000, which was higher than the city public works staff initially anticipated. That caused the plan's total estimated cost over 10 years to be revised from $5 million to about $7.4 million, said Public Works Director Jim Karch. At press deadline, the council was still considering a $179,024 contract with Hanson Professional Services Incorporated, engineering services related to the design and construction work to restore Monroe Street. The vote comes as the council has discussed recently cutting some city programs because of a projected deficit of about $3 million next year that could grow to $8.5 million by 2022 if revenue does not increase and the budget is not trimmed. The city, which has about 320 miles of streets, once had 41 miles of brick streets, but now only 3.5 miles remain. Some brick streets have been lost since the 2009 plan was developed but never adopted. Residents asked in April to have their block of Monroe Street repaired as a brick street rather than resurfaced with asphalt after Ward 4 Alderman Amelia Baragas canvassed the residents and made them aware of that option. It was that local reaction that brought the 2009 master plan back to the attention of the council. Baraga suggested the city use some of the $4.8 million earmarked for annual street resurfacing and sidewalk projects to preserve brick streets. Red Kettle campaign off to a slow start. The Salvation Army of McLean County's annual Make a Difference campaign is off to a slower-than-usual start, even as Salvation Army's Safe Harbor homeless shelter is filled to capacity. Salvation Army announced Monday that the campaign, which began November the 10th and ends December 23rd, has raised $154,064.39. That's less than 30% of the campaign goal of $515,000. Included in the money raised so far is $51,869.09 from the 25 red kettles at stores throughout Bloomington Normal, and $102,195.30 from mail, online, and other gifts. The red kettle goal is $255,000, and the goal for the mail, online, and other gifts is $260,000. While the Make a Difference campaign generally starts slowly and picks up steam as Christmas nears and temperatures drop, Salvation Army Development Director Angie Bouban said, "Giving is lower than usual for late November. With people doing more and more shopping online, brick-and-mortar stores are seeing less traffic, which affects how our kettles perform," she said. In addition, many Central Illinoisans donated generously earlier this fall to agencies providing relief after hurricanes devastated parts of Texas, Florida, Puerto Rico, and the American Virgin Islands, she said. Sometimes that national giving can lead to a drop in numbers for local fundraising, Bouban said. "We truly hope people will remember to also support the local efforts of the Salvation Army in their community," she said. Donations raised during the Make a Difference campaign account for nearly one-third of the Salvation Army of McLean County's yearly operating budget of $1.8 million. Donations support Safe Harbor, the food pantry, case management to help people out of poverty, and an after-school program. "I encourage people to remember that there are people in our community who do not know how they are going to feed their family tonight, or do not know where they will sleep," Bouban said. "The Salvation Army is here to help them and give them hope, but we cannot do it without the support of generous donors." Kettles are scheduled to be up at the 25 retail locations from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Mondays through Saturdays through December the 23rd. Donations also may be made at www.sabloomington.org or mailed to the Salvation Army, Post Office Box 3186, Bloomington, Illinois, 61702. People may sign up to be volunteer bell ringers at www.ringbells.org or by calling 309-829-9476, extension 204. There is a photograph on this page entitled "Law and Justice Center Expansion Continues." There are some very large pieces of equipment, metal boxes. It says workers install four new cells for the expansion of the jail at the Law and Justice Center Monday in downtown Bloomington. The self-contained cells include wiring and plumbing and are installed as modules. River City Construction is doing most of the construction at the new facility that will provide facilities for 260 inmates. For a photo gallery, you can go to the paper at www.pantograph.com. Music for the holidays. Illinois State University School of Music will present its annual Music for the Holidays concerts at 3 and 7 p.m. December 2nd and 3 p.m. on December the 3rd in the Center for the Performing Arts on campus. Featured will be the 350 members of the ISU Symphony Orchestra, the Men's Glee, Women's Choir, Belle Voix Concert Choir, and Madrigal Singers performing a variety of sacred and secular holiday music. The program includes Sleigh Ride, Hanukkah Festival Overture, and a new arrangement of O Magnum Mysterium. The concert will conclude with an audience sing-along. Tickets are $10 to $15 at the CPA box office. We'll take a short break. Please stay tuned.